It is good to certainly see everyone out this morning and to have this opportunity to share with you all from the Word of God. And this morning, our lesson is going to focus on being faithful stewards of what God has provided for us. If you would, let's turn over to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16, and over in verse 13. Luke chapter 16 and verse 13. Jesus reminds us that no servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. Jesus says you cannot serve both God and mammon, both God and wealth. And when you begin to think about the words of Christ, these words are just as relevant as today as they were in this first century when Jesus first said them. So what I want to do this morning here is actually take a look at the parable that precedes this. This is going to be Luke chapter 16, starting with verse 1, where we see the parable of the shrewd manager. And I'll simply read this parable and offer a few notes for it. Luke chapter 16, starting with verse 1. And it reads as follows. He also said to his disciple, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, what is this that I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my master has taken the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill and sit down and quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into their everlasting homes. He who is faithful in what is least is also faithful in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. And again, he ends it by saying, you cannot serve both God and mammon. And so before I actually go into a short explanation here, I want to provide some quick background information as to this particular parable. So first off, a steward. A steward was an individual who was put in charge of at least one aspect of his master's household. Now, that steward could be put in charge of the entire household itself. And one of the key aspects of a steward is that a steward was to be found faithful. That individual was to be trustworthy. And when you think about this, of course, this all makes sense considering the fact that this steward would be over his master's entire livelihood. He would be in charge of everything. And so, again, this individual had to be someone who was faithful and trustworthy. And we actually see an example over in Genesis chapter 39. And we're going to read verses 4 and 5. Genesis chapter 39, verses 4 and 5. And over in these verses, we actually see Joseph. Genesis chapter 39, verses 4 and 5. And Joseph himself is a steward of Potiphar's household. And those verses read as follow. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessings of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. Now, throughout these next several verses, we see that Potiphar's wife would actually make advances towards Joseph. But we also see that Joseph, again, is completely trustworthy here. And he acts in such a manner. So as you skip down to verse 8, we read the following. And I switch over to the NIV version here, just because it might have come out a little bit clearer here. Joseph said, "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care." And again, the point being made here is that we see Joseph as a steward in Potiphar's household. But notice that Joseph himself is completely trustworthy. He's trustworthy and he's faithful with all that Potiphar has. And notice he's even trustworthy in regards to his dealings with Potiphar's wife. Consider that all people are stewards of what God has provided to us. We're all stewards of what God has provided to us. There's not a single thing that we own that God has not provided us with the means to obtain. So all of these things that we have, again, they belong to God. And again, we're simply stewards of what he has given us. David understood this concept. Let's turn over to 1 Chronicles in chapter 29. 1 Chronicles chapter 29. And we're going to read verses 14 through 17. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verses 14 through 17. And again, David points out this fact that we really can't offer God anything because it all belongs to him anyway. Those verses read as follow. "But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this?" And this is David collecting resources for the temple that will be built for God. But he says, "Who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this? For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you. For we are aliens and pilgrims before you, as were our fathers. Our days on earth are as a shadow and without hope. O Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have prepared to build you a house for your holy name is from your hand and is all your own. I know also, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness." And the point being here that I wanted to make here is simply that everything that we have, again, belongs to God. And God has provided us with all things. And think about the fact that God knows those who give willingly, and he knows that those who give out of love and devotion for him. God also knows the heart of each and every man, and he knows, again, those who give willingly and those who truly give out of that love that they have for him. And ultimately, again, keep in mind that we're simply stewards of what God has provided for us. Now, as we take a look over at this parable over in Luke chapter 16, if you consider those first two verses, verses 1 and 2, we're told several things here. We're told that this servant was wasteful of his master's resources. We're also told that he will have to give an account and that he would lose this stewardship. So consider that, again, this steward was to be faithful and that he was to use his master's resources to accomplish his master's work. He was to use his master's resources to accomplish his master's work, not his own work. Joseph certainly would have used Potiphar's resources to accomplish Potiphar's work and not his own. Consider as stewards, again, we're to be faithful with the resources provided to us by God. And in being faithful, we're to do the work of God and not our own work. Consider whether we are faithful with the resources that God has provided us with. Consider also that certainly we will all give an account for our actions here on this earth. Death will certainly take us all away from all of these material items that we have. And yet, if we have been faithful with what God has provided for us with these resources here on earth, consider the treasure that we lay up in heaven for ourselves. Let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27. And that one verse reads, "And as it is appointed for man to die once, but after this, the judgment." And I wanted to get to this concept of settling accounts. There's a couple of examples I want to read. And these are parables that Jesus would tell here. But think about this concept of settling accounts. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 23. Matthew chapter 18, verse 23. And this verse reads, "Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants." We're going to see this exact same concept over in Matthew chapter 21 and verse 34. Matthew chapter 21 and verse 34. And in that verse we read, "Now when vintage time drew near, he sent his servants to the vinedressers that they might receive its fruits." So basically in these two verses, we see a king and we see a landowner settling accounts with others. And again, just like this steward, again, keep in mind that we too one day will all have to settle accounts with our Lord as to how we use the resources that he has provided for us here on this earth. And again, consider, you know, that one element of a steward, the fact that stewards were considered to be faithful and trustworthy. In Luke chapter 16 and verses 3 through 7, we see that this steward, we find him making plans for himself. He knows that he's going to end up losing this stewardship. So, you know, when you begin to look at it, he already knows that he has to come up with some type of plan in his mind here. In verses 3 and 4, he notes that he can't dig, so he couldn't do physical labor. He was too proud to beg. And so he comes up with a plan as to what he will do when he's actually put out of his master's home. So his entire goal here is to secure his future. The goal for him is to make sure that he's not found homeless once he's put out of his master's household. And certainly in order to do that, we see that he would build favor amongst his master's debtors. In those following verses, we see a series of actions, in which case it appears that these debtors all receive a very gracious discount from this steward here as to what they owe to the rich man. Now, just to provide a little information here in regards to the Jewish systems for loans. The Jews themselves were not to charge interest to their fellow Jewish brothers. And we actually see this this concept over in Exodus chapter 22. We see it over in Leviticus chapter 25. But I want to turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy chapter 23, and let's take a look at verses 19 and 20. Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 19 and 20. And in those verses we read, "You should not charge interest to your brother, interest on money or food or anything that is lent out at interest. To a foreigner, you may charge interest, but to your brother, you should not charge interest, that the Lord your God may bless you and all to which you set your hand in the land which you are entering to possess." And I bring this up because even though they were not to charge interest, I mean, when you begin to think about human nature, think about the measures that we would go to in pursuit of wealth. Think about the things that we would do in order to attain these worldly goods that we so want. When someone wanted to borrow money throughout this time frame, when they wanted to borrow money from a rich man, they didn't go to the rich man himself. They actually would go to the steward. And so this steward, again, had control over his master's entire household. So as they went to the steward, whatever terms the steward drew up, this is the terms that the debtors had to respond to. This is what they were going to be responsible for. So if the steward decided to charge interest on the money loan, then this would be on the steward. And it would be the steward who would be accountable for this. If this matter ever went to court, it would be the steward and not the rich man that will actually be held accountable. So when you begin to think about this concept, this rich man found himself in a pretty decent place because he would benefit from the interest that he would receive. But at the same time, if anyone ever took this to the courts, it will be the steward that will be standing before the courts and not the rich man. Well, the point that I wanted to make here is, again, you know, you think about the fact that they understood the finer workings of things in this world. They knew how things operated, how things work. And again, even though they were told not to do these things, again, that pursuit of wealth sometimes overwhelms us, and it certainly shows the hearts of certain individuals. What these stewards would do in order to protect themselves is that they would oftentimes draw up a statement in regards to this loan. And when you look at this statement, that statement didn't have two numbers on it. It didn't have the principal and the interest that we would probably see nowadays. Instead, when you look at that particular statement, it will have one number. And that one number would include both the principal amount that was borrowed, and it will also include the actual interest tied in. And for example here, out of the book Jewish Slavery in Antiquity, there was an instance in which Herod the First would actually send out his freeman to borrow money. And he was pretty close to bankruptcy at this point. So he sent this man out to borrow money, and his free man borrowed 17,500 drachmas. But when you actually look at the note itself was written for 20,000 drachmas. So both the interest and the actual principles, again, were tied into one number. And again, you know, I bring this up simply to say that, you know, they found a way to protect themselves. So, again, they would not be found, you know, standing before the judge one day. And, again, you begin to look at the fact that they all understood how things work. They understood the final workings of things and how to take advantage of the system. So as we take a look back at this parable here over in Luke chapter 16, think about what has happened in these verses. And we saw that the steward considered his options. He took decisive actions so that when he was put out of their stewardship, he would again be welcome in the homes of one of his master's debtors. We saw that he would call his master debtors in one by one, and that he quickly settled their bill that appeared at what appeared to be a huge discount. But again, what could have simply been them just simply paying back the principal. The rich man sees what the steward has done, and he commends him for his shrewdness. Now, consider what Jesus says about this steward over in verse 8 here. And as we look at verse 8, Jesus says, "So the master commends the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light." Now, the steward is commended not for his dishonesty. Instead, he's commended for taking advantage of the opportunities that are before him. He's commended for the effort, the energy that he actually puts into securing his future. So it's not his dishonest nature that he's being commended for. But again, you know, you think about how generous this steward was with resources that did not belong to him, that belonged to his masters. He was very generous in these things. He put forth this extra effort. He put forth all of this energy to make sure that once he had lost that stewardship, again, he would still be found in the home of one of his master's debtors there. And so to make this point about what Jesus said over in verses 8 and 9, I wanted to take a look at a couple of examples throughout this time frame. And in their pursuit of wealth, I want you to consider the Pharisees and some of the things that they would find themselves doing in order to attain wealth. Oftentimes, they found a way around the law. And just to kind of take a little step back here, I do want to make it plain and clear that it's not wealth itself that is evil. Money itself is not evil. It's neutral. Again, it's this desire that we have for money and whether or not we begin to put these things before God. In fact, over in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, in that one verse we read, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." So, again, it's this desire that we have for money that really takes us away from God. So, one of the examples I wanted to look at in regards to these Pharisees is how they will oftentimes place their traditions above the law itself. And let's turn over to Mark chapter 7, and let's look at verses 9 through 12. Mark chapter 7 and verses 9 through 12. And in those verses, we read the following. "And he said to them, 'All too well you reject the commandments of God, that you may keep your tradition. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, if a man says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is korban, that is a gift to God, then you no longer let him do anything for his father or mother.'" And when you begin to think about this, you know, you think about this, korban itself was a gift to the temple. It was a gift to God. And oftentimes the Pharisees would have people make these donations, whether it be their entire estates or whether it be certain goods that they had. They will have them make these donations to the temple or make it to God, as they would say. And in the process of doing, you know, this individual may not have had the abilities to care for their parents or to care for family members. And so it really became a problem when these Pharisees and these religious leaders throughout this time frame really began to encourage people to donate their estates, to donate their goods to the temple. And so the one thing they kind of forgot about is they really didn't care whether or not these individuals had family members or parents to care for. And so ultimately, in their pursuit of wealth here, you see that they began to literally place their traditions above the law itself. And in many cases, we'll have people not caring for their parents. A second example that I want to take a look at, certainly if we turn over to Matthew chapter 23 and verse 14. Matthew chapter 23 and verse 14, Jesus mentions that they use religion itself to defraud vulnerable widows of their homes and the limited resources that they had. So when you begin to think about these Pharisees, and certainly Matthew chapter 23, there's several things that Jesus will mention here. But in verse 14, again, you know, he talks about how they use religion to take advantage of widows. And again, the point that I wanted to make here is that these Pharisees, who, if you go down a few verses in Luke chapter 16, in verse 14, they're actually called lovers of money. And again, you think about all of the things that they would do in order to attain this wealth, this earthly wealth. I also want to consider the tax collectors throughout this time frame. Now, a tax collector was an individual who would actually pay for this opportunity or lease the opportunity from the Roman Empire to collect taxes. And in doing so, they could basically, as they collected taxes, they could more or less institute additional taxes in order to make themselves wealthy. And the simple fact is, there really wasn't a limit that you could place on these things. And ultimately, what would end up happening is these tax collectors would oftentimes collect so much, in which case the average Jewish citizen would end up putting their land, their homes, everything, you know, up to the banks so they can actually pay taxes and things of that nature. And ultimately, they would end up losing these things because they couldn't pay enough for it. And again, the point that I wanted to make here is when you begin to think about these tax collectors, think about it. In their pursuit of wealth, think about the measures that they will go to in order to attain these things. Now, consider when you begin to think about everything that they do and did throughout this time frame, consider the energy, the efforts that they actually put into attaining these worldly possessions. Think about everything that they put into attaining these worldly possessions. That was their goal in life, to attain wealth, whether it be some of these tax collectors or whether it be some of these Pharisees or other religious leaders throughout this time frame. Consider the efforts and the energy that they will actually put in to attaining their goals. In contrast, consider we who are Christians. As a Christian, we certainly should follow the standards of Christ. We should follow Christ. We are indeed disciples of Christ. And so we should be living our lives faithfully, serving God, and using the resources that he has given us to do his work. And certainly, in the end, our goal is to also secure for ourselves a heavenly home. And I want to take a look at a few examples as well. And this is in contrast to what we've seen from the Pharisees and tax collectors. Let's take a look over in Acts chapter 9 and verse 36. Acts chapter 9 and verse 36, and we actually see Tabitha or Dorcas being mentioned here. Acts Acts chapter 9 and verse 36 here. And that verse reads, at Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. Now, if you go down a little bit in verse, I'll just go ahead and read verse 37 and 38 here. We read, but it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in the upper room. And since Lydia was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. And as you read verse 39, we read, then Peter arose and went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room, and all the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. And the point that I wanted to make here is, you know, you think about these resources that Dorcas had here and how she used them for others. And again, think about the fact that she willingly shared with other widows and others who might have been poor. But the simple fact is, she built up for herself, again, treasure in heaven. She began to make friends in heaven as opposed to here on earth. And again, when you look at the things that she would do, she was a faithful steward of what God had provided to her. And she used those things accordingly. Over in Luke chapter 19, and I want to take a look at one more example here. Luke 19, we actually see the account of Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus was a manager of tax collectors. And over in Luke chapter 19, verses 8 through 10. Luke 19, verses 8 through 10. We read the following. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house because he also is a son of Abraham. But a son of man has come to seek and save that which was lost. And the point that I wanted to make here is that Zacchaeus took his goods. Again, consider that we are all stewards of what God has provided for us. Zacchaeus took the goods. He gave to the poor, and he restored those that he may have defrauded. And again, think about the fact that Zacchaeus also is building friendships in heaven. He's making friends, but again, not here on earth, but making friends in heaven. And he's certainly making friends with the one who can definitely ensure that we have an eternal home, and that being our Lord and Savior. In Luke chapter 16 and verses 10 through 12, Luke 16, verses 10 through 12. We read the following. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who would commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another's man, who will give you what is your own? Consider that this steward was extremely gracious with his master's resources. Consider this worldly man should have been using his master's resources to accomplish his master's will. But instead, we see that he would display this cunning and this shrewd nature that he had by being extremely generous with resources that belong to another to accomplish his will, and not that of his masters. And the one thing you begin to see is that he displays this unfaithful and untrustworthy nature that he had. Consider that our use of resources that God has blessed us with here on earth will be one of the factors that determine our eternal resting place, whether we find ourselves in heaven, this heavenly home with our Father, or again, if we find ourselves condemned. Our faithfulness with what God has provided for us can certainly lead us to this eternal home. Think about what Jesus said over in John chapter 15 and verse 14. John 15 and verse 14, where he says, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." The point that I wanted to make here is that, you know, when you begin to think about those of this world, those that do not serve God, they don't know God, they don't serve him with the things that God has blessed them with. When you think about these individuals, again, think about the standards that they live by, the fact that they put so much effort and energy, again, into attaining whatever goal, worldly goal they may have for themselves. Think about we as Christians. Shouldn't we also put forth that energy and effort in terms of Christian standards? Shouldn't we also put forth a tremendous amount of energy to ensure that we too can secure that heavenly home with our Father? Think about what we read over in James chapter 1 and verse 27. James chapter 1 and verse 27 tells us, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted in this world." Think about this opportunity that we certainly have to assist those that are in need. Over in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, we're told that, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those of the household of faith." So again, consider that God has certainly provided for us all things, whether that be tangible or intangible, whether it be those things that we can touch, or whether it be the abilities that we have, whether it be the time that God has provided for us. Think about whether, again, we take advantage of the numerous opportunities that we have to preach the word, to help others of this world that are less fortunate. And again, think about whether or not we're doing the will of God with what he has blessed us with, or if we are doing our own will and taking care of our own needs with the things that God has blessed us with. We're also provided with the word of God. And as a Christian, certainly we are stewards of this word. Again, consider the responsibility that goes along with that. Let's take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verses 1 and 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verses 1 and 2. And in those verses, we read, "Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful." And I want to close here by taking another look over in Luke chapter 16 and verse 13 here. Luke 16 and verse 13. In that verse, Jesus says, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other." He says, you cannot serve God and mammon. Think about it. Will we focus our efforts either upon our desires of this world, or will we focus our efforts on God? We can't be loyal to both. Certainly as a Christian, shouldn't we follow Christian standards? And, you know, when you begin to look at this parable that Jesus provided over in Luke chapter 16, if those of this world are going to adhere to the standards of this world, if we call ourselves disciples of Christ, then certainly we should be following the standards of Christ. We should be following the will of Christ, the will of God. And certainly if God has provided for each and every one of us resources to do his work, then again, shouldn't we be found faithful in doing the work of God while we're here on this earth? I want to read this this one last verse here over in Matthew chapter 4. And we're going to take a look at verses 8 through 10. In Matthew chapter 4, we actually see that Jesus is being tempted by Satan here. In verses 8 through 10, those verses read, "And again the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give you if you fall down and worship me. Then Jesus said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." Again, consider all of the resources that God has blessed us with, everything that he's blessed us with throughout our time here on this earth. And consider to what use we're actually putting those things. Are we doing work for ourselves? Are we chasing after more wealth? Or again, are we using these things to serve God and to do his will while we are here on this earth? Again, think about the fact that each and every individual is simply a steward of what God has provided for us. And the question becomes whether or not we are faithful with the things that he's provided to us. If you are present this morning here and you have not obeyed the gospel, we certainly stand ready to assist. If you find yourself as a Christian who has fallen away from the faith and you require the prayers of the saints, whatever your need may be, we ask that you come while we stand and sing.